Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, October 1st. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the show, licensed professional engineer and construction specialist Darren Tracy is here to answer your home maintenance and repair questions. Darren has extensive experience in construction, renovation, and property management and joins us to offer his expertise. Always a popular show when Darren is on. Call early. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Email us if you want, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, the award-winning Darren Tracy, and your home improvement calls coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Home maintenance, repair, and improvement today on the program. And we welcome back Darren Tracy, a licensed professional engineer with experience in construction, renovation, property management. He is a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm, which specializes in unique projects. He is a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. Award-winning Darren Tracy. Always great to have him on the show. The number to call is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But that number is 800-348-2551. Well, Darren Tracy, aren't you the fancy pants? The Adirondack Agricultural Architectural Heritage has given you an award.
Given my wife I an award.
Oh, that's true.
That's right.
The both of you.
She's a big part of the equation.
What did you get the award for?
As a historical restoration.
For the little teeny house?
Yeah, for the teeny house
in
Glens Falls.
Yeah.
You know, for as small as it is, it's really got a lot of press.
How many? 300 square feet? What is that?
No, it's 400 square feet per floor, and it's two floors.
Well, okay.
So it is 800
square
feet.
But that was a year worth of work?
It was a year and a half of brutal work.
Well, that's good. So you worked a year and a half, and you got the little plaque.
Yeah,
good for
right.
you, man. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Let's see. Oh, you did some homework. We had a question on one of the most recent shows.
Right. A couple shows ago, a unique question came in about a treehouse, if a treehouse needed to be built per code. And I didn't know the answer off the top of my head, so I called an organization that I subscribe to, the International Code Council, who actually writes the building codes. I pay them a yearly fee, and they will answer any questions I have. That I don't know the answer to.
Right.
And, they sent me back a long-winded response, but basically it said that typically a treehouse would be situated on a one- or two-family site, right. And as such, it's called an accessory building.
Yeah.
And an accessory building would have to be constructed to current code.
Well,
in New York State, the current building code is 2015. There is one caveat to that. And that if it's less than 200 square feet in size, which many tree houses might be, you do not need a permit to build it.
Okay. Well, that's
There's a footnote to that caveat that even though it's exempt from a permit, it still must comply to the applicable codes.
Yeah, good Lord.
So that's my homework.
Well,
question.
Thank you for that, and it's disheartening, but there you go. This email came in from Doug. We built our house in 1999, and it had never been in the attic. There are no problems with the house, but I was wondering, should I check it out once in a while?
Yeah, I think it would be a good idea. You could check out to make sure that you don't have any mold up there, make sure your ventilation is adequate.
Yeah.
If you don't have adequate ridge vent, soffit vent, you might get some mold up there, and that could be a problem. So, yeah.
All right, this one is from Maureen. A summer home had a leak in the shower, repaired the sheetrock, and put plastic over it. The shower is a sheetrock and epoxy-painted shower. Any idea of a material to use to repair other than repainting with epoxy paint?
I'm not really understanding the details she has going there. But
do you want to read it? Maybe it was in the translation.
Summer
home, leak in the shower, repaired the sheetrock, put plastic over it. The shower is a sheetrock and epoxy painted shower. And Maureen wants to know if there's any material to use to repair other than repainting with epoxy paint.
Yeah, I'm still not following the detail as you described, but you could use a cement board for a shower backup. That's really good. That's better than a waterproof sheetrock.
Okay. All right. Well, you know what, Maureen? If you need more detail, give us a call.
Right.
And that number is 800-348-2551.
She can also email me, too, or look up my website. And
what is your email address?
It's Darren@WestBranchInc.com, D-A-R-R-E-N at West, W-E-S-T, Branch, B-R-A-N-C-H-I-N-C.com. I do field some calls from people that are unable to get their call through, and I'm glad to do that.
You mean people actually listen?
You know, I'm surprised at how many people do listen.
Shocking, isn't it? All right, let's go to the phones and prove your point. Joe in Ballston Spa. Joe, you're on.
Hi, how are you all doing?
Good, how are you?
Good, good. And I know hearing about Mr. Tracy's awards and great qualifications there, I'm wondering, am I being billed $500 a minute or an hour for talking to you on the phone here?
Actually, no. You know, it's public radio, so you have to make a pledge
to
the lockbox.
I'm trying to keep it real.
All right,
absolutely.
Man. All right, go ahead.
So I've got a problem. I've got a house. It's got a basement that has... I've owned the house for about 20 years, it's a two-family house. It's got a basement that's always been getting wet, and never figure out, first of all, where the water is coming from. And now I've got all kinds of problems with the I've had a sub-pump, but National Grid is telling me that because it's a two-family house with 2 meters in each tenant's name, that I don't live there, I'm a landlord, that I would have to now get a separate... for a landlord's meter there, which is pretty crazy stuff. So I think I'd like to see maybe if I could try and stop the water from coming in. And there's also, and this is where I'm trying to figure this whole thing out, there's also in front of the house, or to the side of the house, maybe about 10 feet away from the house, I see this little puddle of water. And I'm wondering if that could be a water line or a sewer line coming from the street. It doesn't smell like a sewer line. So I'm really, you know, without a clue here, and maybe you can help me figure out what I have to do to figure this out.
I have to come clean on this. I recognize the caller's voice.
Really?
The caller. So hello, Joe.
Okay.
Yes.
Hello, Darren. Long time no here, but I didn't want to put our personal meeting as part of this. Highly technical question here.
Okay.
I'll try to make it quick here, Joe. One thing you could do is smell the water and see if you can smell any chlorine in it. If there's some chlorine in it, that would lead one to believe that you might have a water line leak. If it's pooling there, to the opposite end of the water spectrum, if it has a septic smell, you'd know that you'd have a septic leak. But you said it was in Albany area, I believe.
Yeah.
There's a lot of clay in Albany, so if you have roof runoff and that's going to a depressed area, that clay will hold water and pool for a long time. So it might just be a drainage problem. You can send me a picture, and I'll take a look at it.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. Bye.
Thanks, Joe. 800-348-2551 is the number. Darren Tracy is our guest. Home maintenance, repair, and improvement today on Vox Pop. And Rick in Pittsfield. Rick.
Hi, good afternoon. I had called you the other day about that basement fill. Thank you for your advice. And I have a follow-up question. My question is, if someone buys a house that the previous owner didn't pull the required permits, i.e. for some demo or for something else, to what degree is the new owner exposed to sort of catch up? I'm not talking about permits for additions or something like that, but just general repair permits that are in process but not finished and not pulled in the right timely order.
Yeah, I really don't know the answer to that question. That may be more of a legal question, and I suppose it would depend upon the severity of the work or the repair. If it's a life safety issue, then that would have to be taken care of. I mean, that's important stuff. If it's not a life safety,
how about just a demo that was started personally that now needs to be, you know, continued and filed, I guess.
Again, I don't really know the answer to that. My common sense would say that you would not be personally liable for making that right. And I compare that to houses that have existed for 50, 60, 100 years. They're not currently code compliant, but you buy that house and you do not have to make it code compliant. So,
you know, I think this one might be a better posed to our real estate crew who are here fairly often. So you might want to try that question again, Rick.
Thank you.
All right, have a good one. Let's take a break. Zach the Engineer, 800-348-2551 is our number. The award-winning Darren Tracy is our guest, and we'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is here. We talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement on the program, and we'll get right back to the calls. But you wanted to talk about carbon monoxide detectors and smoke detectors.
It's a time of the year where weather's changing. You start thinking about heating season. So I thought it would be good to mention to the audience that it would be a good idea to check your smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors to ensure that they're working, and if they have a battery backup, that the batteries work. And I want to just speak to the location of, because there's a lot of misinformation about that. A smoke detector is minimally required to be in every bedroom. In addition to that, it needs to be outside of every bedroom. The term is the general vicinity in the code book. I would say maybe within 20 feet of a bedroom.
Yeah.
Additionally, one on each floor, including the basement, not required in the attic unless it's a habitable attic.
Okay.
And those are smoke detectors. Now, a carbon monoxide detector is required minimally outside of the sleeping rooms.
Okay.
And then if you have a heating appliance in a bedroom, it would be required in a bedroom or in that room also.
Okay. So, all right. This email came in from Joe in Colony. Joe says, I'm a builder. No, doesn't say that. He says, I am building a shelf for a heavy object on the side of the house, and I'd like to use Superstrut or Unistrut. There are several components to it, and I'm having trouble visualizing enough to know what joints to purchase. Are you aware of an online tool that I can draw what I want and it will generate a bill of materials?
No, I'm not. But you could go to a Unistrut website. And Unistrut is a, for those that don't know, it's the main component is it's a U-shaped channel. And it has a bunch of slots in the channel, and it's used primarily in the electrical industry, but it has lots of applications in other industries as well. And there seem to be a million and one accessories for the Unistrut for certain situations.
Okay.
But I would check their website and take a screenshot or get a PDF of that.
Okay.
And that would probably serve your purposes more quickly than trying to find an AutoCAD that could draw something like that.
Darren Tracy is our guest today. Home maintenance, repair, and improvement on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. Cynthia Taconic, you're on.
Hi. I'm calling because recently we installed some air conditioning, and in doing that we had they had to get to the electrical boxes. These are two separate buildings. And we found, to our surprise, that there had been significant vermin in habitation as well as damage. So it's been corrected. But my question is it really necessary to have the rewiring done in new boxes? Because I just think they may have nibbled a bit on the electrical wires.
Yikes.
Yeah, the short answer is yes, because they've eaten away the insulation. And I recall one show where I actually brought in a wire to the studio and describe to the audience, how this was short circuited and the wire was melted. I don't know if you remember that, Ray.
Vaguely.
But No, that should be repaired. You could take that back to the nearest junction box. It doesn't have to go all the way back to the main breaker box, but to the nearest junction box and run a new line to the receptacle or outlet or light junction box. And, yeah, it's really important because it's a fire hazard. And, you know, the chance of something happening in the future might be small, but the consequences are large. Mm. So that's just something you don't want to take a chance with. Circuit breakers.
And is it just the wiring, or is it the boxes themselves that need to be replaced?
No, just the wiring. I mean, typically mice will just eat the insulation on the outside of the wire, not the box, just the wiring.
Okay.
Typically,
I
kind of
figured that was the answer.
Yeah, and typically that only happens with a Romex wire versus a metal clad wire. Romex has a plastic sheathing on the outside.
It's delicious, right?
Well, I guess they think it is. Maybe at 20 below when you're starving, it's good to a mouse.
All right, Cynthia, thanks for the call and good luck. 800-348-2551, the number. Martin in New Paltz. Martin.
Hi.
Hello.
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 Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Splendid. You're on.
I have a disquieting thing of going into varying restaurants, and they inevitably have tables blocking fire exits, or the fire exits I've been in also have deadlocks. And as many times as I complain, I never see inspectors or someone coming by to have this corrected. I'll go back in, same problem. Hmm. I wonder if there's a central number or who should be called other than the local building inspectors, who don't seem to be very excited about correcting these problems that could eventually become fatalities for the patrons.
Yep.
I'm wondering if you could suggest a way of reporting these.
I would say that that's a generalization in that I think there are a lot of code enforcement officials that are interested in safe buildings and helping out. And typically these types of code violations vary from municipality to municipality. I know some cities are more vigilant about annual inspections and things of that sort. I would say that any new buildings that are constructed have to be constructed to the current building code and with proper life safety exit devices in place. Older buildings that have been around for a long time, they're grandfathered in, so unless there are major changes undertaken, they don't have to bring their building up to current code. So that, you know, it is a concern. It is an issue. You might want to speak to the owner. If you're legitimately interested, speak to the owner of the building. Say, hey, you know, maybe you might want to consider moving this table out of here because you don't have crash bars and people who could exit in a case of an emergency.
All right. Without casting aspersions upon Martinstown, and I certainly have no direct evidence of what he's saying is true or not, but if it is true, then is there another level beyond? In other words, if Martin goes to a city inspector, gets no satisfaction, is there another level?
Yes, there is, and I guess that was his question, and I skirted around that. You can go to the State of New York Building Codes Department. That in the hierarchy, they are above the local code officials, and you could bring your complaint to them.
Okay, Martin, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Matt in Boston Spa. Hello, Matt.
Hello. How are you?
Good. You're on.
Thank you. I had a quick question about replacing a suspended ceiling in the basement. I'm sure you're familiar. It's those older tiles and the siding, the droop, and the supports are breaking away a little bit. I was wondering what type of newer material you might recommend to replace that with. And would I need to take out the entire support system for the tiles and put in new ones, or just replace the tiles with a different material?
I think just replace the tiles, and typically they're called acoustical panels. They come in various sizes, 2 foot square, 2x4. I'm understanding what you're describing. They're also staple-up panels, but they tend not to droop as much. And I think you could reuse the existing framing where the panels drop into, their mains and tees. Check to make sure they're wired up correctly. In a basement, they might tend to rust. I've painted the steel framing.
I've had a couple of mice issues up there over the past few months, and I'm a little concerned about, you know, attracting them back again and, you know, eliminating the access.
So. Right. So you could reuse the steel framing, put new panels in. I would put a dehumidifier in the basement with higher humidity. The panels tend to droop more. Keep your humidity down to below 60%, close to 50%. That would be good. That would help them maintain their rigidness. And, you know, good luck with the mice and, you know, the other rodents. They're a problem, just like the other call that we recently had about eating wires. I mean, it's just...
Right.
They want to be where it's warm in the winter.
Yeah. All right, Matt, thanks for the call. Let's go to Laura in Windsor. Laura, you're on.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. My husband and I bought a house about 5 years ago, and the house had kind of the garage is under the house, and there's a basement. You know, you walk into the garage and then you walk into the basement from the garage. And the garage and the basement were wet, kind of wet. And what we did was a bunch of landscaping in the front to move the water away from the house, which has done a great job at, you know, that addressing that issue. My question, though, I have two questions related to that. One is, there are interior walls, like there's an interior closet in the garage that got wet all the time when the water was a problem. And there are interior little rooms like our, you know, just interior rooms in the garage, in the basement where there are studs and you know, plaster or sheetrock walls and stuff. So one of my questions is, do we need to rip those out to see if there's mold that's still there from when the water was a problem, number one? And then the second question related to this is the basement still seems musty to me. I have a really sensitive nose, and my husband doesn't smell it, but I smell it. And we have a dehumidifier running all the time, but I still smell a little mustiness, which, you know, I don't spend a lot of time in the basement, so I can live with it as long as I know that I'm not creating some kind of problem in our house.
Okay, let me go to the first question. In any areas that have been subjected to water where they have the right amount of food and humidity, temperature, those areas should be opened up and ventilated so that they could dry. And I took a continuing education course one time, taught by a PhD fellow who works for the state, and the question was asked, when do I need to remove sheetrock and studs? And his reply was, as long as the material is not deteriorated, for instance, wood rotted, as long as the material can be cleaned up with a product, it can remain in place. It doesn't necessarily have to be removed.
Okay.
So that's the answer to that question. And regarding the smell, once something gets damp initially, and when the humidity level rises back up in the summertime, it'll tend to smell. I mean, I have an old dresser in my bedroom that cleaned up is like an antique. But, you know, when the humidity gets up to around 60% in August, I can tend to smell it. Ah. I would suggest putting a humidistat, not just a humidifier, but a humidistat in the basement so you know what the humidity level is, because your unit may not be pulling the humidity level down to below 60% or down to around 50%. But that's what you want, 50 or 60%.
Laura, thanks so much for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Darren Tracy is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And Janet in Springfield. Janet, you're on.
Hi, yes, I'm calling regarding some water hammer and how quickly I need to address it. It's been affecting the house for a while, and I thought it just needed the lines bled. So when I had the shower repair done in April, it eliminated the problem for a few hours, but it's come back, and I'm not sure what I need to do about it.
Water hammer.
Okay, water hammer is when you have some air in your line, you open up the water, and for lack of a better description, the water gets a head start and runs into the end of the pipe and hammers it. Mm-hmm. It makes the pipe move. Ideally, you get the air out of the line by bleeding from a high point.
Okay.
Sometimes there are situations where piping gets trapped, the water gets trapped up into a high point. It's very difficult to get that out. So not sure there's that much you can do about that except finding that high point and cutting the pipe open, put a little bleeder there. Also, you can secure your piping with pipe hangers and clamps so that the effect of the water hammer is minimized.
Okay, I can do that. It seems to affect everything. Like there's a big thunk when I turn on the outside faucet. There's a big like banging when the toilet gets flushed or the washing machine is going.
Yeah, you may have air leaking into your system.
Air leaking into the system?
Yeah. Somewhere. Is this a private well that you have, or are you on a municipal
water? It's private, and it's on city line.
Oh, so you have municipal water supplied by a municipality?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe there's some air getting in someplace along the line. It sounds like that's the case if you have it in various locations.
And what's the first step in diagnosing the problem?
Well, trying to locate where the air is in the pipe, it would be a trapped high portion of the line.
Okay.
But it sounds like there might be something else.
Do I call a plumber to do that?
Yeah, you would call a plumber or a handyman to do that. Also talk to your municipality saying, hey, I have this problem in various fixtures. Might there be some air getting in the line from the municipal source?
Huh. You think that most municipalities will be right running over to fix it?
You know, I don't know. It's just it's odd that it's recurring in different locations.
Yeah.
Typically, it would be one isolated location, a high spot in the line.
No, it's the whole house. So it'll happen if I turn on the kitchen sink. Mm. It happens when I use the toilet. And it stopped for about a couple hours when I had bathroom work done in April, and they turned off the main and then put it back on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little puzzling. Contact me. I don't want to take any more time of the program.
Contact me
after the program, and I can talk to you some more.
All right.
About
what's
that.
The email address once again, Darren?
It's darren@westbranchinc.com, or you can Google West Branch Engineering.
Right. Or you can go to our webpage, wamc.org/voxpop, and there's a link there. And Janet, thanks for the call. And let's grab one more call before the next break, and we go to Tom in Fort Ann. Tom.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. We are doing a flooring project, and after we tore up the carpet, we have 3/4-inch particle board, basically pressed sawdust, and that's over the top of 1/2-inch plywood. The 1/2-inch plywood seems sufficient. In other words, the particle board, the floor feels solid enough, but the plywood by itself is rather spongy, and I want to put a hardwood floor down. And it's a multi-level house, so the stairs are definitely would be changed if I were to keep this floor up. I'm dealing with a situation with stairs going both directions, up and down.
Okay, so what's your question?
So my question is, would a hardwood floor feel as solid over this particular subfloor, being 1/2-inch plywood, in the same way that the particle board feels solid now?
I think it would. Maybe even better. Although I would be inclined, 1/2-inch plywood by itself typically would not be an adequate dimensional product to span your joists. I would be inclined to replace the chipboard or the press board with another.
Definitely, that's going to be replaced.
Okay.
Well, I was going to take it out, and I was wondering if I could lay hardwood floor directly over the half-inch plywood.
Yeah.
And would it feel as solid as the particle board?
I think it would if it was a tongue and groove product. Yeah, I do think it would. And, you know, if it's it was a full 1 inch or dressed out 3/4 inch dimensional tongue and groove product, I think you'd be okay with that.
All right, Tom, we got to take a break here. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. And Darren Tracy is our guest. Home stretch coming up. Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551 is the number. Darren Tracy is our guest. Oh, boy, we got a stack of emails here. All right, we'll move as quickly as we can, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one is signed Wondering. Wondering writes, please advise. I've always thought that you only needed to have CO detectors if your heating system involves a furnace or combustion of some kind. All I have are electric baseboard heaters. Am I deluding myself? That's Wondering.
I wouldn't say you're deluding yourself, but according to the code, you need a minimum of one outside of the sleeping bedrooms in the house.
Okay. All right. This one.
Or if it's a two-story or three-story house where you have bedrooms on the first floor and the second floor, you still need a carbon monoxide detector outside of the sleeping quarters.
Okay.
If you do have a combustible heating unit in a bedroom, then you would need one additionally in the bedroom.
But not an electric.
But not with an electric
All
heater.
Right. This one is from Mario in Ausable Forks. I had an energy audit done and was told I'm losing a lot of heat through the roof. The house, which is in the northern Adirondacks, is two-story, approximately 32 by 32, with a pretty steep roof pitch. There are two window dormers on one side, one window dormer on the other. It is cathedral ceilings on the inside. The shingles are close to the end of their useful life. Is there a good way to add insulation from outside without disturbing the interior ceilings? Could I add rigid foam insulation over the current roof shingles and then use metal roofing instead of shingles?
You could do that. There's some complicated considerations by doing that, adding the rigid on top. That's a really good detail to put rigid insulation on top of your plywood sheathing and below your metal roof or your shingles.
He was saying put it on top of the current shingles and then put metal over the top of that.
Now, you'd want to remove your existing shingles. I would advise doing that. But,
okay.
But there are some other things that you have to do with that. You'd have to seal up your ridge vent and your proper vent, because you're changing the location of your conditioned space. You're conditioning your attic space by installing insulation on top of your roofing.
All right.
So there are some considerations there.
This one's from Mike. Can transom windows be replaced independently of the French doors below them? The windows have developed some rot in the sill areas and need to be replaced, but the doors are fine. And that's from Mike.
I think they can be. You might have to do some custom millwork, but yes, I think they can be.
This one's from Donald. I'm wiring my garage. I was going to use 14 wire for all the lights, 12 wire for the receptacles. A friend of mine told me just to use 12 wire for everything. I have a new 100 amp service panel in the garage. Is there advantage or not to using 12 gauge wire for everything? And that's from Don in Pittsfield.
There is an advantage in that you can feel a bit more safe if somebody mistakenly utilizes a 15-amp breaker instead of a 20-amp breaker, because 14-gauge wire must be paired with a 15-amp breaker. And then a 12-gauge, you can use a 20-amp breaker.
Okay.
The breaker protects overheating of the wire, and that's why they have to be paired accordingly.
So the lower the gauge,
if you go lower the gauge, the thicker the wire. Yeah. It's more conservative. It's harder to pull. It's more expensive. So it does have those drawbacks.
This one is from Sharon, and then we'll jump back on the phone. Sharon writes, I have a new addition. Interior walls have insulation up, but no wallboard yet. Also, it's not sided yet. Can a mini split be installed now? I may not get to the rest until spring. That's a mini split heat pump.
Right. I suppose it can be. I think typically they're mounted on top of the sheetrock after you install your sheetrock. They go on top of the sheetrock, and mm-hmm. it's a cleaner-looking detail. But there may be some advantages of drilling penetrations in your walls before the sheetrock is up. So it could be a combination of before and after.
All right, Darren Tracy is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Mike in Glenville. Mike.
Yeah, hi. I got thanks for taking a call.
Sure.
I got some silicone waterproofing stains on my glass windows, and I've tried every cleaning product and scraping it with a razor blade even. Is there any product, you know, that might penetrate that to get it off?
I don't know of any solvents that remove silicone that is cured. They may exist. I don't know of any. My best luck has been achieved with a really sharp razor blade, just being careful with a really sharp razor blade. That's a good chemistry question. If I find the time, I'll research.
All
take that one in as a homework question.
Or hold that one for the science forum, Mike. I'll bet you our chemist.
Cured silicone.
All right. Thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. And Darren Tracy is our guest today. Melissa in Sheffield is on. Melissa.
Hey, I've had three different roofers give me three different answers. You know, and they all have a huge price difference. So I'm wondering, I have a house with 1720s it was built, and it just has the planking board and the shingles that need to be ripped off. Does it need legally the plywood, or does it not need it?
By code.
Does that make sense? But it would be in Connecticut, so that might, I don't know.
Okay.
Might make
I don't think it makes much difference. Most states adopt a International Code Council, and codes don't vary that much from state to state. So you could, per code, you could remove the shingles that are there and reattach them to the boards, but what happens is there are gaps in those boards. So often,
well, right, and I can plainly see that. And so, but one guy said it absolutely has to be done. Another guy said nope, it doesn't. And I was just trying to find out who knew what they were talking about.
Well, for a good job, it probably absolutely needs to be done. By the letter of the code, it probably doesn't need to be done. But I would definitely suggest installing a roof sheathing, 4x8 sheets of oriented strand board or plywood on top of those existing boards, and you'll have a
is
much better.
Is it half inch or 5/8?
You could probably get away with half inch there with the boards underneath. Yep, half inch.
And what about the ridge vent? One said it didn't need it, the other one said it did, and I'm like, hello?
Yeah, well,
even though.
Unless you're using a spray foam insulation in conditioning your attic space, as I mentioned a couple calls ago, you definitely would want a ridge vent because you want your attic space to breathe. You don't want moist air wicking up through your ceiling and then cooling and condensing up in the attic and rotting your wood or allowing moisture to be one of the ingredients that mold needs. So you definitely want a ridge vent and you want
a
soffit vent.
I know that it doesn't have a ridge vent. It doesn't have a ridge vent now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really old house. But if I have this done, it doesn't have any baffling. And a previous job, they insulated wrong, I'm pretty sure. And they stuffed it in between the joists.
Right. So the listeners who are not understanding what we're talking about, where the rafters go down and meet the exterior wall, you want an airspace there so air can travel up through the soffit, which is the overhanging part of the roof, travel up into the attic, and then up to the peak through the ridge vent.
Yeah.
So what happens is sometimes that space where the exterior wall and roof meets, that gets plugged up with insulation. People think they're doing a good job by buttoning that up tightly, but that's not what you want. You want a gap there so that you can vent your attic.
All right, Melissa, thank you. We have to move it along here. 800-348-2551, the number. Darren Tracy is our guest. Marianne in Saratoga. Marianne.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My siding is buckling, and I've replaced it 3 times already. The people next door to me had put on a four-season room, and I think it's the glare from the windows that's doing the damage to my side of the house. And I'm wondering what I can do to prevent this from happening a fourth time.
Is this is this true? Could the glare do that?
Yeah, I think it could. Yeah, yeah, reflect the light.
Yeah, I did look. I looked it up on Google, and it said that it happened.
That's interesting. That's I've not heard of that before, but that's certainly reasonable.
Hmm.
That's a really good question.
Any UV protective paint or anything you could put on the siding? Any coating?
I think it's more of a temperature issue than the UV issue.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like starting a fire with a magnifying glass, if you ever did that when you were a child experimenting.
Mm-hmm. And the window in my bedroom is also damaged. The ceiling between the panes is gone.
Yeah, that's an interesting problem. Have you talked to your neighbor about that?
Yes, I have, and I haven't gotten very far with them putting up a film on their windows because they like the view, even though the film is a see-through film.
Yeah. Is it a large area of your home that's affected or a small area?
It's the side is about 18 feet, and it's a ranch house, so it's... One floor,
yeah, if it was a small area, like 2 square feet, I was thinking you could put up some sort of a screening material. That's a difficult one. I'm not sure. You could plant some trees, possibly. You could...
That's an idea.
Yeah, plant some trees.
Okay.
Good luck with
that.
Well, not an easy problem to solve.
No, she doesn't sound happy, and I understand.
No, I wouldn't be either.
Let's go to Rick in Hudson. Rick.
Oh, good afternoon. I recently had a plumber do some retrofitting in the house, and he used a PEX tubing, half-inch PEX tubing, and where he tied into the older plumbing, he used fittings called gator bite or shark bite fittings to join the PEX tubing to the older plumbing. I read somewhere that those fittings are only considered temporary, and that a more permanent installation would be where the PEX tubing is actually expanded and put on the tube on the fitting, and then it's shrunk with a collar installed around that. Is that correct?
I'm not. It depends on the fitting you're talking about. I think it's common to use a PEX type adapter to go from copper or black iron or galvanized pipe to PEX, and if it's black iron, the adapter would thread into or around the black iron pipe, and then it would have a nipple coming out. You slide your PEX over top of it and you clamp it. I believe Shark Butt is a name brand.
He's done that. He's put the fitting on the copper, but where the PEX goes into the fitting, it's just pushed on without any tools or anything.
Okay, there is a system out there, not used commonly now. I believe it's called Wirzbo, something like that, Wirzbo, where you have a plastic pipe like PEX, and then you have a tool that you insert into the plastic pipe, and it's an expansion tool. It expands the pipe, and then pull that baby off and slide it on over the male part of your fitting, and then it contracts to its original size, and that's acceptable.
That's considered permanent, right? But the other fitting, where it's called a shark bite or a gator bite, where you just push the tubing onto the fitting without using any tools, that's considered a temporary connection.
Yeah, I'm going to have to defer on that. I'm not sure. I'm thinking it would be a permanent connection, but
not positive.
I'm not certain.
Okay, Rick, thanks for the call. Over to Rich in Gloversville. Rich, you're on.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. Hello.
I have a two-story house. I had some work done. I had a shower installation. And what's happening is I get hot water in the shower, all I need. but no hot water to my upstairs sink. Now, the house was built, I think, in 1928. The contractor told me it was from lime buildup or something in the pipes, and the only way he could get it clean would be to rip the walls out and change the pipes. Is there any other way of getting hot water into my sink without ripping my walls up?
You could reroute the piping, possibly have it surface mounted, clamped to the wall, and you could paint the pipe so it would blend in with the wall, so less obtrusive. But it would be exposed. That's an alternative. That's a lot less work. But again,
but there's no way. There's no chemical. Or there's no.
You start cleaning out the inside of that old iron pipe, and you're just asking for problems. Mm. You weaken it. You're going to have a leak at the most inopportune time.
I don't want that. So the only way to do it is an exterior fix.
No, you could rip out the walls as you suggest. And again, I would, when you're replumbing, I would make sure that it's well insulated behind the pipe, between the exterior, cold weather, and the pipe itself. Or
so that means I've got to rip out everything from the basement up to the second floor.
No, as I stated earlier, you could run this exposed, and you wouldn't have to rip anything out at all, or you could run it exposed, and then you could do some finished carpentry work and create a chase to hide the pipe.
Yeah.
That's another alternative that's commonly used.
A little easier, too.
Easier, yeah. Not easier than just plain exposed, but easier than ripping out the wall.
All right, Rich, thanks a lot for the call. All right, we only have about 30 seconds here, and I apologize to you, Tom, but you'll be the last one. About 20 seconds for your question, okay?
I'll make it quick. I just replaced my concrete basement floor, and I was wondering what would be appropriate cure time before I put a sealer on that concrete.
28 days.
28 days?
28 days. That's just a common maximum compressive strength achievement for concrete. 7 day is it's three-quarters of its strength, but a full 28-day cure. You'll get your, if you order 4,000 PSI concrete at the end of 28 days, you should have that full 4,000 PSI.
Well, Tom, that's it. And thanks to Darren Tracy for being here. Support comes from Interim Healthcare, helping people remain at home for 49 years, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day, serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga. InterimHealthcare.com. Merritt Bookstore, Millbrook, open 7 days a week, an independent book and toy store offering book clubs, author events, gift, and subscription services. More information at MerrittBooks.com. The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe offering fair trade coffee. BlackSheepDeli.com. At Capital Roots, providing job readiness and life skills training to inner-city Capital Region teens on a two-acre urban farm, using agriculture as a positive and engaging tool for learning, capitalroots.org. Thanks once again to Darren Tracy for stopping by today. Thank you for stopping by. Thanks for the great calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy for stopping by. I guess it's his job. Jim Lavoulis is our producer. Phones answered by Susie Chekai and that other guy. I don't know who he is yet, but we'll get your name for the next program. Thank you both very much. Tomorrow, Rich Guthrie will glide back into the studio to answer your bird questions. Right now, stand by for The Book Show.